Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Rootscast. I'm Jeff Daverman, the creator of Root Concepts, owner of Infamous Network, and we are here discussing the ideas behind Root Concepts and how it applies to the lives of our fan base, the people that we work with, and the folks who love what we do and want to use our artwork to express themselves and succeed in their own artistic endeavors.
Good evening again, everyone. This is Jeff Daverman, and you are tuned in to Rootscast. I'm your host, and I am in Never Better Studio again this evening with Douglas Howarda, also known as Uncle Doug to me. And we have been going through having some discussions about empowerment psychology while Doug has been here visiting from Vietnam. So how are you feeling tonight, Doug?
I'm feeling good. Yep.
Welcome back to the show, and I'm really excited to continue our discussions about empowerment psychology, which is a whole set of ideas that you've been working on, and you actually did lectures in Hanoi on empowerment psychology, and those can be found on the Empowerment Psychology Facebook page. And today we're going to go into, I guess, what you call part three. And so what we're going to be talking about a little bit, so what we've been talking about, essentially, is over the past few episodes, we've been covering the ground that you say is all kind of under the umbrella of begin within. And then it expands into how we interact in the world with all of our other relationships, or the primary relationships, I guess, is what we talked about, starting with the relationship with yourself, and then the relationship with other people, others around us, and then the relationship with the universe. And so I'm just going to let you take it from there, because I'm looking at your notes here, and you got a lot of really interesting things. And so why don't you go ahead and let us know what you're thinking about here, what you want to expand on today.
All right. I think you've picked up on the major points that self-knowledge and self-awareness are what inform our ability to relate to others in a way that is effective, and where we're living authentically from a place where we have boundaries and limits, and we can be generous and compromising, but not at the expense of our own well-being. And so we talked about how that can be difficult when a person is either compensating for low self-worth or devaluing of oneself, or one is sort of bought into the idea that they are less valuable or interpret things as never being good enough.
So that was a lot of the subject matter of our last episode. Our audience might remember that we talked about the arc, and put a little bit of color on it around selflessness and selfishness. And so when you're talking about low self-esteem, in another episode we talked about the hierarchy of emotion as well, and how those are filters, starting with shame, going all the way up to anger.
All of it leads to a way of seeing how we may be depleted in the way that we go about living life. And empowerment is in a way of learning how it is that we can overcome the depletions that we may have come to know or come to believe about ourselves. And so today's episode is really about understanding what are we up against, what are the challenges that come along with living life. And for most of us, it begins with what I would call a less than perfect childhood. Now, it's important to realize that probably between the moment we're born until we're maybe 18 or 20 years old, we are vulnerable and other people are responsible for our development and our well-being. Unlike a turtle who hatches from an egg and never will ever meet the turtle that laid that egg and is ready to go off into the world fully prepared, although, you know, quite vulnerable, and many of them don't make it past a very early stage of life. Human beings are really dependent upon the caretakers and the nurturance that they get during those formative years. And I've come up with three things that I think are really important. And if we were to put it in ideal terms, we would say that a child experiences what it means to feel safe. So it's the adult responsibility while raising a child to create the kind of protection that a child knows that they can feel safe and secure. Now, of course, that's an ongoing process where a 15-year-old is going to be given more and more independence and choice making around the risks they take or the ways in which they engage the world than a 5-year-old or a 2-year-old would. But the adults are responsible all the way until the child is grown up and can gain an autonomy and an independence to be able to make all those decisions for themselves. But safety is a very foundational piece to what it is that influences how we see the world and how we function in the world. A second very important thing is that children are raised in ways where they are given tasks that are consistent with their developmental levels. So a child learns that they can master the world that they're in by being able to be successful at doing the things that are required of them from the adults in their world. We don't ask an 8-year-old to drive a car because we know that they're not intellectually or emotionally ready for that kind of responsibility and the complexities that go along with it. You know, we determine what are the things that are developmentally appropriate so that a child can gain success in the way that they do that.
It seems to be pretty intimately connected with feeling safe as well, that adults wouldn't ask you or wouldn't expect a child to do something that developmentally they're not ready to do.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, because when a child gets the idea that they can't do it and they start to develop ideas about being a failure or not being good enough or somehow there's an over association with the performance of doing something, then that's when we start to begin to discover that we have low self-esteem or you know, the things that are counter to what it is that really is the ideal of what it means to be parented or supported as we grow up. The third part of it is nurturance. So nurturance is unconditional love and support. And what's most important of it, of nurturance, is that it's not predicated on performance. Our value is inherently connected to our essence and the fact that we're human beings, as flawed and as imperfect and as developmenting as we are. None of us is born knowing all the things there are to know. We're inherently learning as we go. And when we're nurtured, it's because we recognize that that's what life is. It's not because we've attained something or we've accomplished something or we've proven something. And so I contend that in an ideal world or in an ideal childhood, those three things would be met. Those needs, a child's needs, would be met at a very high level. But the truth of the matter is, most of us get some degree of all of those things, And the degree to which we don't get those things become the responsibility that we end up owning when we come into adulthood. We have to figure out, oh, how do I make myself or keep myself safe? And how do I feel internally secure, which is the outcome of being kept safe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how do I understand that I'm never a failure because I'm always in the act of learning? And if I don't know something now or if I'm not good at something at this moment, it's because I haven't been able to be at that developmental stage or that point where that's appropriate for me. And so, and the third thing, of course, has to do with the degree to which we feel loved and nurtured in this world, and the relationships that come out of that kind of stability and security and love that we ultimately then can have for ourselves.
Well, life is hard. I mean, that's really ultimately, there's a lot of challenge just to keep it going through an entire lifetime. You know, I think that obviously the things that you're talking about in an indiscriminate universe, you know, certainly do help one get by in a way where you can feel okay in life, feel love, feel the ability to accomplish. And it's understandable why, you know, all of the things in life that can beat you down would disempower you, and why, as an adult, the things that you, you know, didn't get as a child and weren't able to compensate for, don't understand how to do that, can really be filters that are disempowering. It makes sense.
That's right. And many people have enough sense of their own worth, you know, feel loved and connected, you know, have some abilities and are able to accomplish the things and feel successful at it. And may not even realize the degree to which they are less than their own potential. In other words, have insecurities or have self-doubts or have unresolved emotions that come from messages that we received as kids that still factor into the limits that we live with.
Everybody's got stories about something that happened in their childhood that they still remember that impacted them. I mean, we've in the time that you've been here, and you know, we've shared some of those together, you know, and so it's like there certainly are things that do have an impact on you, even if they're brief moments. I mean, so many of them are brief moments, but you know, one of the things that you brought up is that there are poignant moments, and so clearly, you know, you live with your childhood for your entire adulthood, and so reconciling the things that were the shortcomings, or the, how would you put it? Not shortcomings necessarily.
Well, it's the limitations.
Limitations.
The truth is, we often inherit the unresolved limitations from the generation and generations that precede us.
Which is, in a way, why you can't ultimately, if you can exercise empathy and compassion, you understand it's not really their fault either, right? Because
right.
It's just passed down.
That's right. It isn't about blame or fault as much as it is about understanding. And, you know, I'm often hesitant to use an ideal as a measuring stick for, you know, what is real. But it does help us to see that there's something to overcome, that many of us have gotten messages or inherited the limitations that have existed in the generations that have preceded us. And again, we're not, you know, stuck in the mire of our own self-pity, but by the same token, we're not really reaching our highest levels of potential, of empowerment, of confidence, of assertiveness, of creativity, of the things that are actually inherent in a freed human spirit.
A self-aware human spirit, is that
right? Self-aware, self.
And of course, self-awareness isn't a constant either, right? Self-awareness is something that is a practice, essentially, right?
It is a practice. It's the relationship we have to the, not only the emotions we're feeling in the immediate experience of life, but it's also delving more deeply into the things that have influenced our the emotions and the unresolved, what we call the baggage that we carry through life, which actually has potential for being resolved if we tend to it and move beyond it. So I often say that our 20s, the decade of our 20s, is our task, our developmental task, is to be able to understand the difference between who we are and who we were brought up to be. In other words, you have to separate out, you know, what's more essential about who we are versus the messages we got from the primary influences that shaped our lives, our parents, our teachers, our community. Okay.
You know, that reminds me of an Emerson quote, which is one of my favorite quotes. To be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment.
Yeah. There you go. And that's the core of what empowerment is and what this whole thing is talking about. To be able to be ourself in a true and full and confident and permitted way, encouraged way.
Well, and so childhood is clearly a very instrumental, important part of one's life to understand as we become an adult. What were the ways in which we were felt safe and felt like we were able? And what was the third one? Felt nurtured.
Nurtured, that's right. You know, and those are, that's a way of thinking it in terms of what we need. And then, of course, you know, the flip side is all the things that we don't need. In fact, you know, are problematic. The biggest to is abuse and neglect. You know, if we are in a negative environment and people are, living out their own frustrations and angers and you know, innocent children are the ones who often bear the brunt of the negative aspects of the adult world. So
that's what you're talking about here is what could be an obstacle to being empowered is not knowing those things about your childhood or not really having a self-awareness to be able to reconcile those things. Essentially, you just drag them along through out your entire adult life and you never actually do resolve them or reconcile it and you never actually do address it face up. And so that's a really big obstacle.
We don't often see it as a developmental task. That part of being a young adult is to actually say, wait a minute, I've got a job to do. It's my responsibility to figure out.
I wouldn't say that we don't just often see that. I don't think that's something that's ever really been addressed in certainly in a formal education or anything like that, right? It is just not taught in that way, at least not here in the U.S.
Well, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that because part of the catalyst for me, you know, going public or trying to take these ideas that I work with individuals about and to say, oh, wait a minute, this is relevant for almost everyone, is because I have a good friend who said, where can I read that? Where can I learn that? Who says that?
You know, right.
And I'm not certainly the first person who's who's saying it, but I think it's very timely right now for us to look at what are the things that come along with life that we have to see as a challenge. We have to be able to look into ourselves, figure out who we are, self-awareness, self-knowledge, overcome aspects of what has been a limiting kind of influence, and overcome those things. And the next thing we have to do is have to realize how the world itself, what society does to keep us from developing and growing. So I'm going to focus in an expansive way in the book about, you know, two of the people that have written the most about this, and you've quoted Emerson. And Emerson says, particularly if we are coming from a insecure or, you know, have low self-esteem and are diminished, that we compensate by trying to win the approval and the acceptance and the belonging of a society, and that shapes a kind of a conformity, a way in which we're compensating for the lack of our own self-worth and confidence by getting the approval externally rather than internally. And so you can look at modern day society and you can see how there's a mainstream culture and people migrate towards the common things, whether it's the clothes they wear, the fashions, what it is they watch on TV, or
social pressures
mm-hmm. to belong to a group and kind of at the expense of our own independent thinking.
So essentially that's why Emerson is saying to be yourself in a world that's constantly trying to make you something else,
right.
Social pressures, conformity, or whatever. Yeah. That's the greatest accomplishment, because those obstacles and those pressures are very influential, right?
That's right.
They really do... They can beat it right out of you, it seems like.
Well, and it's gotten risen to a really high level now because of marketing and advertising and the art of persuasion. And so it's very sophisticated that we're supposed to look a certain way and belong a certain way. I mean, the way I look at it is right now the two major influences that generate a kind of conformity are the emphasis on image. So visual, mm-hmm. you know, you look at Facebook and all these ways in which we're preoccupied with the visual representations of ourselves. And the second is performance. How much do we look at, you know, what it means to be high performing? And it's not that I'm at all opposed to people, you know, becoming good at what they do, but I'm often seeing that the over connection that we have with our value being associated to our performance ultimately then undermines what is our true value and the freedom that comes from living life, being rather than doing. And so,
lots of obstacles there. You know, lots of ways to be disempowered without ever even knowing that's what's happening.
Well, and let's take it even further, because I delved into a little bit of what Carl Jung wrote about as what he called a spiritual crisis. And he's looking at sort of the mass movements in society, what he calls massification, where power becomes localized or decentralized and that the influences take away the choices that we might have, that we human beings become units of a sense that we are all a commodity, that people are shaping us through the powers that exist in this big industrial society that we live in. In other words, the systems themselves are neglectful of the individual for the benefit of the mass. And there's a huge loss in the human spirit when we're were treated, and you know, you look at large factories and industrial the influence of economics in the industrial world, and how it is that people, in order to survive, have to concede them their time and their energy to something that is required by a system that doesn't take their best interests in mind. I won't go more into that now, but that's certainly a large scale consideration about, you know, what happens.
Okay, and so the massification is a term you said from Carl Jung.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he looked back at really the Industrial Revolution and saw that once we've started channeling the human experience to the benefit of an industrialized society, that the common person became a commodity, and
right,
at the expense of our individuation, our individual experience, the ways in which we can discover within ourselves what it is that's possible.
So, like Pink Floyd would say, "All in all, you're just another brick in the wall," kind of thing.
There you
right?
go. That's right. That's a very, mm-hmm, a very good example of, you know, how it is that people experience, you know, a lack of choices in their own life because of the limitations that the systems have generated. That's right.
Well, you can definitely see how that would be, or certainly is, can be and is. I mean, the brick in the wall, or the cubicle, or the rat race, or, you know, there's lots of different ways, I guess, to kind of look at it, where it's just, it's the day-to-day grind, which feels relentless, and so therefore absolutely disempowering.
Yeah, and again, I there's a whole lot more I could say about this, but certainly when we are living in a culture that is influenced more by economic demands and the notion of consumerism than it is what it really means to live as a free spirit, independent of the external influences and motivated most by what there is to discover internally. So
it seems like, you know, there are a lot of obstacles in the contemporary pressures that just the day-to-day, kind of like what I just said, the day-to-day grind, and the having to adapt to the rate of change. That seems like something that a lot of people really do have trouble with, and can also feel disempowering if you just feel like you're, you know, not up to speed with everything that's going on around you. That's very, that you can get disillusioned, or you can get, what do I say, where it doesn't feel safe, where all of a sudden you don't know where the ground is, right? And when you're feeling like that, I can't imagine that feels too good, you know?
Well, here's another huge largely misunderstood or not understood concept. So you talked about it as the rate of change. So very briefly, throughout the history of humanity, when a human being was born and when they died, the number of things that have changed during the course of that lifetime was so small that they would not have noticed, okay? They had the same tools, they had the same kinds of homes, they had the same...
Not so anymore.
That's right. The rate of change has been exponential in its forward progress. And now we're at a point where a 16-year-old has experienced the world already in such a different way than an 80-year-old, that there's a gap between the experiences that two people during the same lifetime have. And It's kind of like a fish in water. A fish doesn't recognize the water that it's in because it doesn't know anything different. And that's really what childhood is like as well. We accept the reality that exists as we come to see it and recognize it. But what we don't have is understanding that change itself is a big part of what it is that's required of a human being. You use the word adaptation. Another word is integration. How do we integrate the changes that are occurring? And the truth is we no longer have any sort of reference point. And my biggest concern is that the stimulation that exists outside of us is such a high level of it holds such a high level of intrigue that most of us are externally focused. Okay, the neglect of our inner life comes because we're stimulated by the things outside of us in such a way that we don't even recognize the difference. Okay, and this is a huge risk for society at large, because we're swept along then more like a herd of animals or a flock of birds than we are independent, unique, creative, developing beings. And so, you know, until we at least grasp the concept that there is a difference between our relationship to the world and, you know, what that is based on who we are. You know, there's something that I think actually comes out of the Bible: be in the world but not of the world. And there's something that really does represent a very important point of observation. It also comes out of a notion of meta-awareness, to be able to see what's happening while it's happening, but hold that separate distance, to be able to have enough of a gap between the experience of seeing it and how it is we are part of it. And so these are things that are actually part of our inner world that require us to be more aware of, you know, what it is that's influencing us. So for me, that's part three in the book, and I'm going to go into all of these things in more depth.
All right. Excellent. So I noticed you got a little bit more on your notes here, and I'm just wondering if you want to just touch on those things or you want to leave that for... So I believe we're going to be doing one other episode, and so we could just touch on that now, or if you want to leave that for the next episode.
Yeah, let's... I think this is a good breaking point, and certainly there's always more I could say about each one of these things, and I hope to amplify or expand on these things when I sit down and write. But the next, what we'll call part four, really has to do with the relationship between ourselves and that which really represents a level of transcendence where we open up to the point where it's beyond what we can know. Call that the mystery, or call that...
Call it the mystery.
Yeah, call it the mystery. and it seems like a pretty important arena, a relationship to that that has a lot to do with empowerment and
okay, fantastic. So we will leave it here for this episode, and just want to let the audience know again, we got one other episode that we're going to wrap it. I know that you're pretty short time in here in the U.S., and so we're going to knock this out real soon, and we'll get it on the air. Thanks again for joining me tonight, and we'll hit the dartboard soon. And thank you, everybody, in the audience out there, for joining us here for another episode of RootsCast in Never Better Studio. We'll catch you on the flip side.
Thank you so much for listening and being a part of what we're doing here at Root Concepts. If you were inspired by what you heard, click the link in the show notes and enter your information so we can send you more great messages like the one you just heard. Until next time, this is Jeff Daverman signing off. Thank you for listening. Peace.